Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On January 28, 2017, 20-year-old Elaine Park left her boyfriend's house in Calabasas, California. Security cameras captured her walking calmly to her car around 6:05 a.m., but what happened next remains a mystery. 5 days later, Elaine's car was found abandoned on the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu. Her belongings were inside, but there was no sign of Elaine. Elaine had been having trouble at home and had also recently begun publicly addressing a traumatic event from her past, leading some to wonder if this was connected to her disappearance. Did Elaine Park decide to walk away from her life to find peace on her own terms, or did something sinister occur along California's picturesque coastline? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Elaine Park. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. With this case, we've accidentally done two California cases back to back. We were in Northern California last week with Pearl Pinson, and this week we're in Southern California, where 20-year-old Elaine Park disappeared off of the Malibu coastline. Unlike the stories of young males that have disappeared after car accidents, this one is more similar to the case of Phoenix Colden, whose car was simply found abandoned in the road. Like Phoenix, Elaine was missing, but all of her belongings were left in her car as if she had just stepped out for a moment and never returned.
Right, but who does that, leaves their car? Like if people are going to walk out on their lives, why would they do it in the middle of a highway or something? You know what I mean?
Right, like, no, it is weird. And leave all of your possessions behind, including, right, in this case, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but like a little bit of cash. And again, it was only like $30, but I mean, $30 is $30.
Right.
You're going to need it.
Yeah.
You know? So... yeah, I don't know, but it's a weird story for sure. And ultimately, it's the story of a woman who had a lot on her mind and, you know, that morning was just trying to clear her head. But for the past 8 years, her loved ones have had to wonder if she made the decision to never come back or if somebody made it for her. Before we dive into Elaine's story, though, we have to, of course, shout out our newest Patreon supporters, Cynthia B., Jeffrey S., and Lindsay W. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you all so much.
Remember, if you want to join them, you can head over to Patreon and join at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes and a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. Oh, and I do want to say something real quick, because I saw this commented somewhere where I couldn't respond. And somebody's like, oh, we have to get, you know, download the Patreon app or whatever. You don't. You just need to like go to the Patreon site to sign up. But you don't have to listen through Patreon because I support several podcasts and I just use the RSS feeds to get them into Apple Podcasts. And I listen to them where I listen to all of my other podcasts. So I know that you can do that for Apple Podcasts. Pretty sure you can do it for Spotify. Not positive about the other platforms you may be listening to this on. But yeah, just go into the help section of Patreon and they'll give you all the instructions on how to do that.
I didn't understand half of what you said, but okay.
The point is, if you join us on Patreon, you can still listen to us wherever you're listening to this now. Most likely. So with all of that out of the way, let's talk about Elaine Park. Elaine Park was born on September 24th, 1996, to Susan and Ray Park in La Crescenta, California, which is a suburb in the Glendale area of Los Angeles County. Elaine was described by friends and family as spunky and outgoing, and she had a passion for the performing arts. She loved musical theater and dance, and she had been pursuing an acting career, landing small roles as an extra on TV shows and movies like Mad TV, Desperate Housewives, Crazy Stupid Love, and Role Models. Though she wasn't yet a household name, Elaine was ambitiously working toward her dreams in Hollywood. But her personal life definitely had its share of challenges. Her parents were divorced, and she had struggled with bouts of depression in her teenage years. She had attended Pierce College in Woodland Hills for a while, but stopped taking classes and had also recently been laid off from a job at a restaurant. And these setbacks just kind of all took an emotional toll on her. On top of all that, by late 2016, Elaine was finally confronting a deeper personal trauma, a sexual assault that she had endured in the summer of 2015. On July 27th of that year, Elaine had attended a concert featuring rap artists Playboi Carti and Father. That night, she was there with her friend Daisy, who knew a man named Michael, who I believe was Father's stage manager. According to Daisy, they met Playboi Carti, who tried to buy weed off of her, and when she refused, they all went backstage to smoke. Playboi Carti allegedly just took Daisy's weed, which is just like a weird side story to all of this. So she decided to leave and just like go back and watch the show. But Elaine decided to stay backstage. Daisy later found out from Michael that she had been taking Xanax with another one of the artists. So like Playboi Carti and Father were at the show, but it was like several other acts as well.
Okay.
Right. So the Xanax combined with the alcohol that she had been consuming, and I'm assuming weed as well, basically left her pretty incapacitated. What happened after that is sketchy in terms of details, but it has been alleged that she was raped by several people backstage, though apparently, again, not Father or Playboi Carti. So from what it sounds like, Elaine was either blacked out at the time and or blocked the assault just out for several months and wasn't really exactly sure what had happened that night. However, a few months before her disappearance, she was finally beginning to deal with it, in her words. It was at this point that she started cutting ties with friends who were either there that night with her or were just like in that friend group. And that included Daisy. She had been living with Daisy, too, in 2016. So the year after this in 2016, and then also moved out. Then on December 28th, 2016, just 2 weeks before her disappearance, Elaine took to Twitter to talk about the experience. Now, she posted a whole thread, and here are just a few tweets from that. Quote, "As for the rape, the people involved know damn well who they are, but I don't fight fire with fire. I've forgiven, so now I can move on," end quote. And then she also said, quote, "I was raped and nobody gave me closure about it. And I don't remember it, so I didn't remember the pain. I just dropped it and never spoke," end quote. Now, the other big thing that happened in Elaine's life was a car accident on May 1st, 2016. Now, the accident itself was not actually a big accident, at least not for Elaine. She was the passenger and ended up with a few cuts and, you know, was just basically kind of shaken up from it. But according to later texts and emails, Elaine's mother, Susan, was pushing her to say that the injuries were more severe than they were. And she even had Elaine go see a chiropractor, which Elaine didn't want to do.
Was she pushing her to do that basically to get money?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, this eventually led to an insurance payout of $5,000, but this wasn't finalized until after her disappearance. So at the time of Elaine's disappearance, they were still going back and forth about the whole thing. Because Elaine vanished in January 2017, the settlement was delayed. Ultimately, it was settled in March of 2017 with that $5,000, but that was divided three ways. One third went to the attorney, one third went to Elaine's medical provider, and one third went to Susan Park, designated in care of the estate of Elaine Park. And that wasn't issued until January 14th, 2019. Again, it ended up being like less than $1,700, mm-hmm. which is not a huge amount of money. But I bring it up because money, even small amounts, was frequently an issue between Elaine and her mother. An example of this dynamic came on January 27th, 2017, the day before Elaine went missing. Susan has explained that she was training Elaine to be responsible with money and expected prompt repayment of any money lent to her. So that day, January 27th, Elaine asked to borrow $20 from her mother. Susan sent the $20 via QuickPay that morning, and Elaine promised that she would pay it back later that same day, saying that her dad was going to give her spending money around 6 p.m. So basically, she needed 20 bucks for the day. She was going to see her dad that evening. Her dad was going to give her money. She was planning on paying her mom back out of that. Now, this is $20 that we're talking about, but it became a huge point of friction. Susan took Elaine's promise seriously and watched the clock for repayment. According to Susan, Elaine was usually good about paying her back, so when 6 p.m. came and went with no repayment, Susan grew impatient. So Susan started texting. At 7 p.m. on January 27th, when Elaine missed the self-imposed 6 p.m. deadline, Susan sent a text asking why she hadn't paid the $20 yet. Elaine did not respond immediately. Then at 9 p.m., Elaine finally replied to her mother's earlier message, writing, "Give me until later tonight." So, you know, she just wanted a few more hours, whatever. Susan acknowledged this and agreed to wait a bit longer. This is, like, to me, a little intense for $20.
I wasn't going to say that, but I was thinking the same thing. Like, this is all over 20 bucks. Like,
yeah.
We lose 20 bucks to our kids all the time.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, but it's like, this is how things were with them. Like, this is just a good example of their general dynamic. And interactions like this stressed Elaine out, as you can imagine. It should also be noted that Susan has been accused of helping herself to money that Elaine earned, including money from those acting gigs that she had gotten.
Mm.
And so Elaine didn't trust her mother.
Right.
While this is all going on, this whole insurance scam, basically,
yeah.
is going on as well.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff about money and the situation is not good. Now, in an email to Susan about that whole insurance settlement, Elaine said, quote, "I already know you want the checks for my routing info for the insurance check. Once it arrives, it better either be linked directly to my checking account or, if it's a physical check, directly in my hands. The full amount. I'm going to call the office and make sure you're not pulling any snake shit either." End quote.
That was Elaine to her mother?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Obviously there's some issues there.
Yeah. Susan herself has said publicly that by 2016, 2017, she and Elaine barely spoke, despite living under the same roof. Elaine largely kept to herself and resented her mother's questions about her life. Susan said, quote, "We don't talk. She lives her own life under the same roof," end quote. She went on to say that whenever she asked where she was going, Elaine would snap, "It's none of your business." Their interactions were so fraught that Susan, quote, "learned to accept leaving her alone," end quote, "to avoid blow-ups, or else we'll fight all the time." It should also be mentioned that living under the same roof was a recent development. So I mentioned that she had been living with Daisy.
Yeah.
She moved out. Elaine had lost her serving job, which probably contributed to that as well. Around the same time, Susan also lost her job. So I think they just both kind of ended up living together again. And that only started in December of 2016. This is also the time that Elaine's father stopped making child support payments to Susan for her. So money was definitely tight.
So there's money issues in the house on both fronts.
Right. And multiple angry texts about money from $3 to $30 were found between Elaine and Susan, like just in the month of December. So by the time we got to January 27th, 2017, and that $20, tensions were already high between Elaine and Susan. Now, also during this time, Elaine had this on-again, off-again kind of boyfriend. He was a 22-year-old named Divine Div Compare. Div is the son of music executive Shakeem Compare, who's a partner of Queen Latifah's entertainment company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. At the time, he lived in a gated home owned by his family in Calabasas. The pair was hot and heavy from the beginning of November 2016 to the beginning of January 2017, so not too long. But on January 3rd, Elaine broke up with Div, saying that she needed to get her life together. Between that day and January 20th, Div sent her around a dozen text messages that Elaine didn't answer. But with all the pressure at home, Elaine reached back out to him and they made plans on January 27th. So that evening, around 7:30, Elaine drove over to Div's house in Calabasas, about 40 minutes away from her house. According to surveillance footage later obtained from the Compere family's home security system, Elaine and Div took an Uber to the movies around 10:20 p.m. and returned to Div's family home just after 1 a.m. early on January 28th. Security video shows the couple arriving back at the house and just settling in for the night. So these security videos have been released.
Okay.
So I've seen all of them and they're just completely normal looking, you know. It's hard to see. I mean, they're outdoor cameras. It's like night vision, you know, so it's not like the...
Sure, but it doesn't show anything nefarious happening.
Not really, no. I mean, you know, they leave when he says he left. They came back when he says they came back. Like, you know, they're both on video both times. Like, nothing weird. But in the pre-dawn hours of January 28th, something went wrong. According to Div's later statements to police and Elaine's family, Elaine woke around 4 a.m., quote, shaking and singing. And she was apparently in the throes of a sudden panic attack. Div says that he tried to comfort her and encouraged her to stay, but Elaine was distraught and decided to leave the house. So she changed clothes and began gathering her things. Surveillance footage from the property captured Elaine walking out of the front door and toward her car at approximately 6:04 a.m. on January 28th. This is interesting because Div has been adamant that this all started around 4 a.m., but Elaine didn't actually leave the house for another 2 hours.
Well, but he also said that he was trying to plead with her to stay. So, I mean,
yeah, but like 2 hours, that just...
We also, I mean, if she was having a panic attack, who knows how long it took her to finally calm down, to actually hear him, they talk.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. And so the other thing is, you know, he said that they woke up at like 4 o'clock and this was going on. But if Elaine had just woken up, she must not have been asleep for very long because phone records show that around 3:20 a.m., Elaine's phone was active on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. So she's just kind of checking her social media. Now, that could have also just been like she had been asleep. She woke up for a few minutes, you know, and messed around on her phone and went back to sleep. That was her last phone usage until after she left his house. So with this whole panic attack thing, it's also notable that in the 6:04 a.m. surveillance video, Elaine didn't appear visibly upset or panicked as she walked to her car. Like, she seemed completely normal.
And I might be jumping ahead here, but I'm assuming that the police were able to look at her DMs on her accounts?
Yeah. I mean, again, like, they've gotten all of her social media. Like, okay. It seems like they've gotten into everything.
So it's not like, you know, Michael, the stage manager who she was with that night, like, DM'd her and said something to cause the panic attack.
It doesn't sound like that now. Okay. She's on surveillance camera leaving, and at 6:07 that morning, her gray 2015 Honda Civic was seen on camera leaving the gated community. Now, due to darkness, again, the video couldn't clearly show who was driving the car, but investigators do believe that it was Elaine driving out alone because they saw her leave the house, you know, like all the timing worked out, basically,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But her leaving Div's home that morning would mark the last time that she would be seen.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code ATTWG. We've been advertising Mood for a while. They've been really good to us, and After trying some of their gummies, it is wild how different each one feels. Those Sleepy Time gummies will knock you out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. They've got immune support, menopause relief, PMS, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and all of them use federally legal cannabis, and it's all grown on small family-owned American farms, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. And best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com and remember, use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. If you're at all like me, then you got your first credit card when you were in college, and maybe it didn't go great. That's why with my kids, I'm trying to get them to figure out money at an earlier age, so they can hopefully avoid some of that pain later down the road. That's why with our youngest, we're using Acorns Early. It's the smart debit card and money app that grows kids' money skills as they grow up. They can set their own savings goals, it has an in-app chores tracker, and their very own customizable debit card gives them an extra sense of independence. Ready to teach your kids the smart way to earn, save, and spend? Get your first month on us when you head to acornsearly.com/ATTWG or download the Acorns Early app. That's 1 month free when you sign up at acornsearly.com/ATTWG. Acorns Early Card is issued by Community Federal Savings Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to license by MasterCard International. Free trial for new subscribers only. Subscription fee starting from $5 per month unless canceled. Terms apply at acorns.com/early terms. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I recently took the True Age test from True Diagnostic and discovered my biological age, and the results completely changed the way I think about my health. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in. I recently took my True Age test, and I was worried about my brain function, but it was actually my cardiovascular that I realized I needed to work on. Luckily, my biological age was about the same as my calendar age. So while I do have a little bit to work on, it definitely put my mind at ease. The test itself was super easy. I just had to do a little pinprick. You send off a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and about 2 to 3 weeks later, you get your detailed report. It's fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Ever noticed how many unnecessary chemicals are in your cleaning products? When I started looking into what I was actually using around my home, I realized that my laundry detergent might just be the worst offender. So many popular brands are packed with harsh chemicals that can irritate your skin, mess up your hormones, and cause allergic reactions. So instead of continuing to use those dye-filled pods, I switched to Earth Breeze. Their detergent actually comes in sheets that are free from harsh chemicals like optical brighteners, dyes, parabens, phosphates, and preservatives. It also doesn't come in those plastic jugs. It's just a lightweight, pre-measured sheet that dissolves in the wash and gets the job done. And yes, your clothes still come out clean, fresh, and soft. I feel so much better knowing that I'm not exposing myself and my family to those unnecessary toxins. So if you're looking for a powerful clean without the harsh chemicals, try Earth Breeze. It's easy to switch, and if you're not completely satisfied, they have an amazing money-back guarantee. And right now, you can try Earth Breeze for up to 40% off plus 4 free gifts at earthbreeze.com/ATTWG. That's earthbreeze.com/ATTWG for 40% off plus 4 free gifts. So what happened to Elaine Park after she drove off? Her plate was caught on a nearby license plate reader shortly after leaving Div's house, but beyond that, the only information we have is based on her cell phone data. At 6:28 a.m., just about 20 minutes after leaving Div's house, her iPhone logged a location sharing action. An Apple iMessage system log in her texts with Divine recorded, quote, "You started sharing location with Div January 28th, 2017, 6:28 a.m." In other words, Elaine's phone began sharing its GPS location with Divine's device at 6:28 a.m. via Apple's Find My Friends feature. But it's unclear if Divine was aware of this real-time location share because I don't think it sends a notification to the person that you're sharing your location with, and it doesn't like send their location. So if he were to go into his Find My Friends app, he would be able to see her.
Right.
But like, it didn't like text him with like, oh, now she's here or anything like that. So he was probably asleep, honestly. And so he might have had no idea that she had even done this.
Mm. But also, why would she do that?
That I don't know. Like, that's, we have no idea. But yeah, it does suggest that Elaine or somebody with Elaine's phone actively initiated location sharing 20 minutes after she left. Elaine's phone records also show significant data transfers from her phone on two occasions that morning. About 69 megabytes of data used at 6:20 a.m. and another 73 megabytes used at 11:03 a.m. on January 28th. Now, this heavy data use is consistent with streaming media. And Elaine's phone does appear to have been running Pandora during the drive and afterward. At 7:13 a.m., Pandora cookies were recorded on the device. And the Pandora app later prompted an auto alert at 9:32 a.m. asking, are you still listening? Don't miss a second of the music that you love. That indicates that the music had been playing without user interaction. So this suggests that Elaine's phone was streaming music continuously from sometime after 6 a.m. till at least 9:32 a.m. I've also read, though, I don't know this for sure, but I've read that Pandora sends that message after an hour of inactivity, which would mean that Elaine last actively used her phone at 8:32 a.m., about 2.5 hours after leaving Div's house. Now, this data also implies that Elaine's phone and presumably Elaine or her car traveled to an area with cell reception and remained there for a period of time. The last cell tower ping from Elaine's phone that day would later be traced to the Malibu area. In fact, when police eventually investigated her disappearance and, you know, pulled her phone records, they discovered that the phone's final ping hit a cell tower on Coral Canyon Road in Malibu at 3:42 p.m. on January 28th. So throughout the morning of January 28th, attempts to reach Elaine by phone were unsuccessful. So after she left Div's house, she didn't call or text anyone.
Okay. So who was trying to call her?
So at 8:51 a.m., Susan tried to contact Elaine about that $20, and she actually sent three text messages within a 6-second span at 8:51 a.m. One reading now, another reading $20, and a third reading now, followed by angry gibberish characters. None of these texts were ever marked as read on Elaine's phone. Now, around 10:40 a.m., when Elaine still hadn't responded, Susan sent another reminder text and then called Elaine's phone shortly after. Susan reported that the call rang twice, then went to voicemail. But then any calls after that went straight to voicemail. So after she hadn't received a reply from Elaine, Susan checked Elaine's bedroom, and that's when she discovered that she wasn't home. But she also noted that Elaine's overnight bag and makeup were gone, which, you know, makes sense.
Because they were in the car.
Yeah, they were with her. And, right. You know, she was probably planning on spending the night at Div's house and wanted to take some stuff with her. Susan says this is when she began to worry that something was wrong because Elaine was usually really good about paying her back.
She just said that?
Yeah.
Like, but she's freaking out about $20 not being repaid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then also between 10:13 and 10:15 a.m., Div tried to call Elaine three times in quick succession. All three of Div's calls failed to connect and, you know, likely went to voicemail. So this makes it seem as though by around 10 a.m., Elaine's phone was no longer reachable on the network. After about 10:45 a.m., Elaine's phone shows no outgoing activity and all further incoming communication went unanswered. At 1:10 p.m., her friend Sadie texted, "What are you doing today?" No reply. 1:16, 1:36, and 1:42 p.m., Susan, Elaine's mother, placed three more calls to Elaine, and those calls all went straight to voicemail. Div also called her twice between 1:33 and 1:34 p.m., and same thing. The fact that Susan's 10:41 a.m. call rang a couple times before disconnecting, but everything else went straight to voicemail, it suggests that Elaine's phone was switched off or lost cell signals sometime between late morning and early afternoon.
Or the battery died.
But then it ended up pinging in Malibu at 3-something p.m.
So it's not dead.
So it seems more like, I mean, it could have just been turned off temporarily.
Yeah.
Or it's she could have just been in an area without cell service. So it seems as though she wasn't just sitting in one place during that time. So Susan says that, again, you know, once she wasn't hearing from Elaine all day, couldn't get a hold of her, like she started to worry because that was not normal behavior. She said that, you know, Elaine would kind of take off sometimes, but like she wouldn't be unreachable.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's evident by what we know, because we know that she packed a bag to stay at Div's house, but it doesn't seem as though Susan knew about that, right? So, I mean, so again, like, it seems normal that Elaine would take off without telling anyone, but abnormal that she wouldn't answer her phone.
Right.
So at 11:58 p.m. that night on January 28th, Susan called the local sheriff's station to ask about filing a missing persons report. Officers, of course, advised her to wait till the next day because Elaine was an adult, and Susan told them that she had taken off before and, you know,
right,
probably told them that her overnight bag was gone and stuff like that. So, you know, in this case, I get that. If your 20-year-old daughter's gone and she took a bag with her, and she,
there doesn't seem to be anything nefarious or whatever. Like, yeah, I mean, I can see that.
Like, that's like one of the rare circumstances where I can understand why the sheriff's like, yeah, maybe give it a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The thing I find interesting about that call is that Susan made it before calling any family or friends to ask if they had seen Elaine.
Hmm.
So prior to moving back in, remember, Elaine had been living with her friend Daisy, but like Susan didn't call her, for instance, and say, "Hey, did Elaine like go back to your house? Is she staying with you?" And Elaine was also supposed to go pick up money from her dad earlier, you know, on the 27th.
Yeah.
So she didn't call him and say like, "Hey, did Elaine come by? Like, did she say she was going somewhere? Like, what's the deal? I can't get a hold of her."
Yeah, I mean, I find it odd that she didn't reach out to Elaine's dad, but,
yeah,
you know, there's no guarantee that she had any of Elaine's friends' numbers.
Well, so she did end up eventually reaching out to friends, and I think she did it, like, via Facebook or something.
Okay.
You know?
That's kind of more evidence that she didn't have any of their phone numbers.
Yeah, but, I mean, she reached out to them on Facebook then. She could have done it first too, you know. But yeah, like, and the dad, I don't know, I mean, I think the divorce is pretty contentious, so that could also be explained away by her just not wanting to talk to him.
Yeah,
but it is still a little weird to me that the sheriff's office was her first call and not like a single person who knows Elaine. Now, according to later statements from Susan, on Sunday, January 29th, she told her boyfriend, Jeff, that she wanted to report Elaine missing because Elaine would have paid her that $20 by now.
It's $20. God.
Yeah. However, she still decided to wait and reportedly didn't contact any of Elaine's friends or family. It wasn't until 9:40 a.m. on Monday, January 30th, that Susan messaged one of Elaine's friends. And that was her friend Sadie. And Sadie's the one who had actually texted Elaine the afternoon of the 28th. So she messaged Sadie, said like, hey, I don't know where Elaine is. I'm worried about her. But also told Sadie that Elaine took her overnight bag and makeup with her. Okay, so, you know, the whole insurance claim too. You know how I mentioned that that was still being negotiated at mm-hmm. the time of Elaine's disappearance? When all of this is happening in late January, the negotiations were ongoing, but at that time, the attorney was trying to get between $15,000 and $18,000, which, I mean, that's, now we're talking like a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
And I bring this up because the next call that Susan made on Monday, January 30th, was to that attorney at 10:30 a.m. Then at 11:48 a.m., she called the Crescenta Valley Sheriff Station again. Then she called the Glendale Police Department to officially report Elaine missing.
And I assume we don't know what the discussion was between her and the attorney.
No, and of course the attorney isn't going to say anything.
Yeah.
Then at 3:10 p.m., she calls the attorney again. After that, a Glendale police officer came to her home to take the missing persons report. So this is around 4 p.m. And it's only after this, when the Glendale police call him, that Ray hears that his daughter is missing. So that's how Ray finds out. Ray finds out from the Glendale police. But neither Susan nor Ray bother to call Elaine's older brother and tell him what's going on.
Okay.
He doesn't find out until Susan finally calls him on February 1st, 2 days later.
Says, hey, your sister's been missing for 5 days?
Yeah.
Jesus.
So also that day, February 1st, Susan and her boyfriend Jeff decided to drive to Calabasas to speak with Div. So I'm not sure at what point they knew that Elaine had been with him and that he's somebody they should talk to. But in any case, February 1st, they go to Calabasas. He tells her the same story that he later gave police, that Elaine had abruptly left his house after this like panic attack and that he hadn't been able to get in touch with her since. Susan asked Div's family if she could see any security footage from that night, hoping for clues. And Div's mother did provide them with a copy of the surveillance video showing Elaine walking to her car at 6:05 a.m. and the car's lights departing the property. However, according to Susan, she said that like the footage cut off right after that, right after at 6:05. And to me, that's like, well, they were just giving you the footage that you needed.
Right.
But Susan thought it was odd. She said, quote, my daughter didn't look distressed or panicked, but for some reason, the video stops at 6:05 a.m., end quote. Now, I can see how you might think that this could be suspicious, how Susan could have thought this was suspicious, because it's like, well, what, you know, did maybe Div follow her?
Sure.
You know, like, yeah. What, like, does the 6:10 a.m. footage showing him getting in his car and leaving, like, you know, and I can see why she might think like, okay, are you hiding something? But on the other hand, from his family's perspective, it's, we're not going to give you like all of our footage.
Yeah. You're not going to get free access to.
Yeah. Like, here's
the
comings
and goings of our property.
Right. Right. So that was something that was like, I think made her suspicious at the time, you know, which I get. So after leaving Div's house, Susan and Jeff went to the Lost Hills Sheriff's Department, which is the sheriff's department in Malibu near Div's house. They request that they ping Elaine's phone. And again, I don't know, like, I think there's been a lot of like confusion over like who's in charge of this, because Elaine lived in Glendale, but she went missing, you know, after leaving Div's house in Calabasas. And then, you know, we eventually find out that her phone last pinged in Malibu. So, like, there's just a bunch of different
jurisdictions involved in this, and nobody seems to be taking lead.
Yeah, I think it's just, it was kind of confusing in the early days. After Susan went to the sheriff's department to ask them to ping Elaine's phone, she made another call to the attorney. Now, I don't have the exact timeline for the official investigation, just that detectives started by interviewing Div, as he was the last person who was known to see Elaine. They also spoke with his family and other friends of Elaine. Now, early on, investigators did not identify any suspects or signs of foul play. In fact, within a couple of months, Glendale police publicly cleared Div of suspicion after reviewing his alibi and the evidence from that night. Sergeant Robert William of Glendale PD later stated that Div had been fully cooperative. Quote, "The boyfriend has actually been the most cooperative in the investigation," end quote. Police were satisfied that Div and his family had allowed full access to their property and surveillance footage without a warrant, and nothing indicated that they had anything to hide. So whatever suspicion Susan may have had about that 6:05 a.m. surveillance footage, the police apparently didn't have those same suspicions because they probably got to see 6:07, yeah, I was just 6:10, gonna say, yeah. and 6:15, yeah. and, you know.
Because they're the investigating police, yeah. not some random woman that showed up at the house who, yes, is, you know, his girlfriend's mom, but, like, little different circumstance there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like I said, I mean, they didn't, you know, require the police to have a warrant. They just voluntarily handed over everything that they had. And so that led them to officially say in March 2017 that they did not believe that Div or anyone else at the Compere residence was involved in whatever happened to Elaine. I'm still always weirded out when police publicly clear somebody in a missing persons case because it's like they're not found. So how can you really, really be sure? But I mean, I do agree that like,
I mean,
there's no evidence saying yeah, that he did anything.
If the surveillance footage shows her leaving the property, and then there's probably surveillance footage later of Div around the property.
Yeah.
That pretty much clears him. Like,
yeah, it does. It does. And so they did make that public statement, like I said, 2 months after Elaine's disappearance.
So at what point do they name Elaine's mom as a suspect? Because right now, all of my senses are telling me that she had something to do with this.
It's crazy, right? And we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, of course. So, like, let's get back to the first days of the investigation.
Yeah, follow the timeline. Sorry. Yeah,
on February 2nd, when police were able to get that last ping from Elaine's phone, that's when they had a huge breakthrough. It basically led them directly to Elaine's car. Elaine's charcoal gray Honda Civic was found abandoned along the Pacific Coast Highway, which is Highway 1 in Malibu. Now, a resident had reported the car parked on the shoulder of the highway near Coral Canyon Road, not far from the popular Malibu seafood restaurant. And Elaine's car was left in a manner that immediately raised concern. The doors were unlocked, the keys were in the ignition, and the headlights were on. In fact, by the time they got to the car, the battery was dead, presumably because the headlights had been on. Inside the car were virtually all of Elaine's personal belongings. Her backpack, laptop, wallet with $30 cash, her ID, her makeup bag, and her cell phone.
You think her mom got that $20 back out of that 30?
Yeah, maybe she had 50. Upon recovering the car, investigators scoured it for clues. Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies and Glendale police officers searched the vehicle and the surrounding area. Glendale PD's spokesperson stated that no evidence of foul play was found in her vehicle. The car was found on a somewhat remote stretch of highway coastline. It wasn't an isolated dead end or anything, but it wasn't like right in town either. Authorities immediately launched an intensive search of the Malibu area, fearing that Elaine could have been injured or in danger nearby. They conducted ground searches of the beach, roadside, and the rugged terrain around Coral Canyon. Search and rescue teams used bloodhounds, ATVs, helicopters, and even divers and drones in an effort to find any trace of Elaine. The search extended into the ocean surf and up the steep bluffs on the coastal side of the highway in case Elaine had fallen or gone into the water. But keep in mind, this is
six days later.
Yeah, February 2nd.
Right.
And she left the morning of January 28th.
Right. I mean, my immediate thought, given the panic attack, the things going on in her life, the car being found where it was, suicide.
Right. And I think that's definitely something that they were looking into. But unfortunately, their efforts turned up nothing. Now, there was heavy winter weather in early February. So like a lot of rain and, you know, cold temperatures, things like that. But, you know, authorities kind of worked through it. That did, of course, have the potential to wash away, you know.
Evidence.
Yeah.
Right.
By mid-February 2017, with no sign of Elaine on land or in the sea, the active field search was suspended. Which, I mean, it makes sense. There are just simply no fresh leads to justify continuing large-scale search and rescue operations. So investigators pivoted back to the human side of the investigation and continued to interview friends, acquaintances, and potential witnesses who might have known something about Elaine's plans or her state of mind. Glendale detectives confiscated Elaine's laptop and phone and pored over her communications and her social media for clues. So what happened to Elaine Park after she left Div's house on the morning of January 28th, 2017? You are told your health starts in your gut, but if you're a woman, it all starts with your hormones. When your hormones are off, everything is off, including digestive issues, mood, mental clarity, energy levels, weight management, and so much more. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted, both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormonal imbalances. And the reviews are unbelievable. Over 50,000 women are raving about better energy, deeper sleep, feeling more balanced and calm, reduced bloating, and easier weight management alongside a healthy lifestyle. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. Of course, the early suspicion fell on Div because he was the last person to have seen her. And, you know, their relationship had been kind of like on and off. So people wondered, could there have been an argument or an incident that night that led to foul play that was then covered up by Div and or his family? For instance, it's been said online, because, you know, this is one of those cases that has a lot of like online chatter. And it's been said online that Elaine was going to confront Div about her sexual assault at that concert.
Confront him about what?
Exactly.
He had nothing to do with
it. He wasn't there.
Right.
Like, I mean, he has ties to the music industry. So maybe
Through Queen Latifah, not like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think on his own, though, like, I think he was also working in the music industry.
Sure. But that.
But like, yeah.
He wasn't
even
there.
Even if he like knew some of the people, like, what? Yeah.
What
I don't know.
Confrontation needed to happen.
I don't know. Like, that never made sense to me. And so I don't really know how that would have ended up like leading to murder. But if you read about this case online, there are certainly people who think that he and his family are still suspicious.
Not every rich person in the music industry is Diddy. Like, not everybody's evil.
Yeah. But again, investigators have repeatedly stated that Div is not a suspect. He cooperated fully. Police believe him. They also like looked around his house. There was no sign of a struggle. I mean, again, there's just nothing indicating that he had anything to do with anything other than the fact that he was the last person, you know, known to have seen her.
Right.
Now, another theory is that Elaine left of her own accord and intentionally disappeared just to get away from everyone and everything.
I mean, that's certainly a possibility, I think more so in this case than most of the other ones that we've experienced or have gone over. But again, same thing, like just leaving your car on the side of the road and then what? Where do you go?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
On a relatively remote coastal highway.
Unless you did that to make it look like you did kill yourself or something like that, you know?
Yeah, but if you were going to that extent, write a suicide note and then take the cash.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, she could have, like, according to Div, she had that panic attack that morning and maybe she did feel overwhelmed and just decided to walk away and wasn't thinking clearly and didn't think to get the $30 in cash, you know?
Could be.
But, I mean, to me, I think if we're looking at her disappearance from the perspective of no one else causing it, I'm more inclined to believe that Elaine potentially harmed herself near the ocean. After all, her car was found near the beach in Malibu, and if Elaine walked out into the surf or whatever, I mean, her body could have been carried out to sea in the 5 days before they started looking for her.
Right.
But there are reasons, you know, to doubt this scenario too, of course. For one, Elaine's family strongly rejects the idea that she would have taken her own life or have run away. Despite her bouts of depression, Elaine had plans and personal items with her. Private investigator Jaden Brandt stated, quote, "We firmly believe Park didn't commit suicide," end quote. But,
okay.
I mean,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, when you're dealing with the ocean, there is a possibility that she just simply has not turned up.
Right. And may never.
Oh, yeah, and may never. And a lot of families, of course, don't want to believe that they're loved one would harm themselves. So it's really hard to say. Malibu was also a place that Elaine reportedly loved. So the simpler answer could have been that she drove to the beach to watch the sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
One hypothesis is that while she was at the beach, Elaine may have wandered off. Like, basically, she could have been in somewhat of an altered state after the panic attack or, you know, like, maybe she just wasn't 100% with it at the time, and she could have wandered off and succumbed to hypothermia or drowned. But again, you know, there was no trace of her, but it was 5 days later. Maybe there wouldn't have been. It's just hard to say. So ultimately, there's no proof that Elaine either disappeared by choice or died by suicide, and her family remains adamant that neither of these theories fits her character. Now, given the unsettling condition of Elaine's abandoned car, many believe that a third party was involved in her disappearance. The thought here is that Elaine may have encountered someone either shortly after leaving Div's house or after driving to Malibu. One version posits that Elaine was actually followed from Calabasas to Malibu. Now, this theory comes from a piece of security footage that was released later in 2017. This clip from Div's home surveillance was taken at about 10:20 p.m. on January 27th, so like right when they were kind of getting ready, like going to the movies. It briefly shows Elaine walking from the house to her car and then back inside. So it looks like she just needed to grab something from her car, right?
Okay.
So it shows her going to her car, going back in. But during that footage, an unknown vehicle with its headlights on can be seen driving past the house, which is unusual because the house is at the end of a cul-de-sac in a gated community. So it's apparently pretty unusual for like a random car to just be driving by.
Okay.
The theory is that that person was there either having followed Elaine or was looking for Elaine. According to PI Jaden Brandt, quote, "There are no other occupied residences nearby. It wasn't like the car randomly drove down the street or got lost," end quote. So the theory is that this person or persons in the car could have confronted Elaine after she left Div's and harmed her, later dumping her car on the PCH to derail the investigation. Another possibility is that Elaine actually made it to Malibu alive, since her car did, and then she fell victim to a random predator there. The Pacific Coast Highway at dawn on a Saturday could have some passing traffic or locals around, and it's conceivable that somebody saw Elaine alone with a disabled car, like maybe she had gone and to watch the sunrise, for instance, had left her headlights on, and got back, realized her battery was dead.
Yeah.
Somebody pulled over. Things went bad from there.
Sure. It's definitely a possibility.
And then, of course, as is the case with any missing girl or woman, the idea of sex trafficking was briefly floated by Elaine's mother and others in the early months, but there's no, like, evidence of that.
Right.
Elaine's case doesn't have the typical hallmarks of a trafficking abduction, and so it's more likely that if foul play occurred, it was an opportunistic crime like we were just talking about, or it was somebody that Elaine knew.
like her mom and her mom's boyfriend.
Yeah, I mean, some people think that. And so the issue that I have, too, with a random abduction in Malibu is that, one, there was no evidence of a struggle in Elaine's car or around Elaine's car. So if somebody did harm her there, they managed to do so without leaving any obvious evidence behind, or they moved her and any evidence away from the car. But if it was just simply an abduction, I mean, that would still fit, though, because if she was outside of her car, for instance,
yeah,
and somebody just grabbed her, then sure, there wouldn't necessarily be any evidence that was left behind. But the bigger reason I have a problem with the idea of her driving to Malibu, let's just say, to watch the sunrise, getting abducted, or even choosing to harm herself, is the fact that her car sat there for 5 days. And like, we're on the East Coast, and so most of what I know about the PCH is from watching the OC when I was in college, as they talk about it all the time. But I've read accounts from several locals who are very familiar with that exact area where the car was left, and they're extremely skeptical that that car could have been there for 5 days without being ticketed or towed.
Okay. This is good information to know.
Yeah. And they've said that they're like, you know, things have changed since COVID, but they said pre-COVID, like, you could barely pull over for 10 minutes without having like highway patrol up your ass. And it wasn't only highway patrol, it's like all the local jurisdictions as well. Like, they were extremely on top of cars that were parked illegally, especially near the Malibu beaches. Because, again, this is a very rich area of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they don't want somebody's dusty Honda Civic sitting there for 5 days. And, again, it was unlocked. The keys were in the ignition.
Headlights were on.
Yeah.
At least for a while. Period of time.
Yeah. It seems inconceivable to people who live around there or lived around there at the time that that car would have just been unbothered for 5 days.
So then that leads me to, obviously, the car being dumped there,
mm-hmm.
right? The car being dumped there and the phone being requested to be pinged.
Yeah.
By her mom, who knew where the car was.
The question, though, is like, how did that happen? Did she, instead of driving to Malibu, actually drive straight home that morning?
Possibly. I mean, do we have any alibi for them other than them just saying we were both here?
Well, I think I don't know about Jeff, but I mean, Susan said that she stayed over at Jeff's house that night, the night before the 27th. But then apparently at one of the searches, she said that she had been home that night. So apparently her story was, yeah, just once, though, because like every other time
she was at Jeff's.
Yeah. So I don't know.
As loose as this is, again, we are only theorizing here. The only person that potentially had motive,
yeah,
was her mom.
And right. And, yes, and that does bring us into the final theory, which is just that Susan is actually the person responsible for Elaine's disappearance. And a lot of armchair detectives out there believe that Elaine did make it home that morning, but something happened there, and it was actually Susan who dumped Elaine's car.
Right. So let's talk about the car here.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, unrealistic for the car to sit there for 5 days. Locals even said it would be unrealistic for the car to be there for any real length of time, mm-hmm. without somebody noticing, getting a ticket, what have you. Don't you think it's a little convenient that if that were the case, that the car was dumped there,
mm-hmm.
around the same time that she went to the sheriff's office and asked for her phone to be pinged?
Yeah. So she asked the Lost Hills Sheriff's Department to ping the phone the afternoon of February 1st. They did, and they found the car the morning of February 2nd.
Right. Whereas if it was somebody else that dumped the car there, like the time, it's just...
Yeah.
It's really convenient timing.
But the final ping, and again, I only know about the final ping. I don't know about other pings from the morning, but the final ping was in Malibu, kind of near where the car was found. And that was on January 28th. So, I mean, that indicates that maybe it was there for 5 days.
Yeah, maybe.
But also, leaving it unlocked with the keys in the ignition also gives me the feeling of, like, dumping a car, hoping that it's going to get stolen.
Yeah.
By whomever, you know, did something to Elaine, because that could have been done by anyone, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, that's kind of the vibe that I get from that, which is that car was just left there hoping that somebody would take it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, it would never be seen again, which would just further muddy the investigative waters, you know?
Right. The reason why I'm drawn to Susan is because of the money,
mm-hmm.
and the phone calls to the attorney.
Yeah. Well, and there's more.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Susan and Elaine did not have a good relationship. And Susan said this herself. I mean, this is not like even me just saying that. Right. Like, Susan has said this. She also said that she had once begged Elaine's father, Ray, to take Elaine for a while because, quote, if we live together, one of us is going to get hurt, end quote. Which obviously doesn't look great, but
it's not an indication of guilt.
It's not an indication that you're going to kill your daughter,
right.
You know? It just means that you're having a really bad day one day.
Yeah.
And that can happen. But Div did say that on January 27th, when he and Elaine made plans, it was partly because, like, she wanted to get away from her house mm-hmm. and her mother. Like, she just couldn't take it. And so, you know, she was, like, really in a bad place. She was really stressed out. And so Div's like, hey, come over. We'll go to the movies. Like,
take your mind off of
this. Yeah, just do something, like, relaxing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why she went over to his house. That's why they ended up going to the movie. She wanted to get away. Then, of course, there is Susan's behavior, like the calls to the attorney, her not telling Elaine's father or brother that she was missing. But then there are also a few disturbing things that were later found on Susan's phone. On March 1st, 2017, there was a reminder on Susan's phone that read FB login history, meaning Facebook.
Yeah.
2 days later, on March 3rd, someone logged into Elaine's Facebook account. This login is recorded as the first login on Elaine's Facebook account history because any previous history had been deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Then on March 31st, there was a note in Susan's iPhone calendar at 9 a.m. that said, hide it. At 10:30 a.m. that morning, police came with canines that were trained in narcotic detection. Then at 1 p.m., there's another note in Susan's iPhone calendar that said, put back, hide items, shed, end quote.
Why did they bring drug dogs?
I don't know. I think they thought that maybe this, like, her disappearance, like, had a drug angle at one point.
The last one was what? Put back and shed?
Yeah, put back, hide items, shed. I mean, a lot of, like, real shady actions.
Yeah. So the reminder to log into Facebook. And then her Facebook history is deleted,
mm-hmm.
except for that one login,
mm-hmm.
which was recorded as the first. And
yeah.
then drug dogs show up
mm-hmm.
after, I guess, after.
Well, and so I did read somewhere that cadaver dogs were brought in. And so I don't know if, like, that was the same day or if that was a different time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then there's reminders to hide things and then put things back.
Mm-hmm.
This is all...
It's weird, right? But the phone data, I think, indicates more that Elaine was in Malibu the entire time. Not that she ever made it home. Apparently, Susan didn't know she was at Div's that night, so wouldn't have known to go there. So it's, you know, there's a lot that works against that theory, too. It's also true that Susan has been a vocal advocate for Elaine since her disappearance. Shortly after Elaine went missing, Susan stood before news cameras and pleaded for help. Quote, it's a complete mystery, unimaginable. How can someone just disappear without a trace? Please come home safe because I love you a lot, end quote.
Yeah, but we've seen people do that before also. Yeah, I mean, Chris Watts, on a magnificent performance for news media, and he had murdered his two kids.
It's hard to say. I will say the Park family also quickly organized search efforts and outreach and had volunteers help post flyers around Southern California. A community organized volunteer search was held on March 12, 2017, which focused on the Calabasas area near where Elaine was last seen. Dozens of people, including volunteer search and rescue experts like Dr. Rhonda Hampton, combed through the trails and brush looking for any sign of Elaine. Her family also hired a private investigator, but I don't know who actually hired him. I think it might have just been Elaine's dad. So I don't know if this necessarily makes Susan look like more innocent, because I don't know that she was the one who hired him. But Jaden Brandt is the PI, and we've mentioned him in this episode already. He worked alongside the family and law enforcement to generate leads and coordinate independent searches. He also became a spokesperson of sorts and articulated the family's belief that Elaine had likely been met with foul play and that she was an involuntary missing person. So what I do find interesting is that police have pretty much been treating this as a voluntary missing persons case. And that's been a great source of frustration to the family. In 2019, NBC Los Angeles ran a feature marking 2 years since Elaine's disappearance and highlighted Susan Park's continued efforts. Susan said, quote, "My heart tears apart, but I can't stop looking for her," end quote. And around that time, Glendale police stated once again that they had no evidence of foul play and no identified suspects, but that Elaine's case was still an active investigation. As suspicious as Susan may seem, it doesn't seem as though
there's no evidence.
The police are super suspicious of her.
Oh, there's no real hard evidence that she did anything.
In 2021, a podcast called To Live and Die in LA did a season on Elaine's case. Neil Strauss and his producers conducted a months-long investigation with input from private investigators and some of Elaine's acquaintances. Which, side note, like, I haven't listened to it. I've read some of the transcripts from it, but like the idea of Neil Strauss doing this is completely wild to me because he's the guy who wrote The Game, that fucking terrible pickup artist book. You don't remember that from like the early 2000s? It completely like wrecked the dating scene for a while.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh my God, it was a nightmare. But the benefit of that season of that show is that it brought renewed attention and crowdsourced tips. So, for example, some previously unseen photos and data were analyzed and a few new witnesses were interviewed. It does seem like it really kind of helped the case along a little bit because at that point, you know, it's 4 years and it had really just gone nowhere. Now, Susan Park was initially cooperative with the podcast, but then she publicly disagreed with some of the podcast's findings and interpretations, because I think the podcast kind of looked at her as a suspect as well. And so now in 2025, Glendale police still classify Elaine's disappearance as an open missing persons case. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department also considers it open, but there have been no public updates indicating progress. Detectives have at times revisited old evidence, for instance, performing additional forensic tests on Elaine's car and belongings, but if those yielded anything noteworthy, it hasn't been shared publicly. So sadly, Elaine Park's fate is still unknown. No remains have been discovered that can be linked to her, and no suspects have been arrested. But of course, that doesn't mean anything, because as we know, plenty of cases have been solved years or even decades after somebody goes missing. A lot of people seem to think that it was just like a random opportunistic kind of stranger crime. I don't know.
I just don't buy that because of the way the car was found.
Yeah.
A crime of opportunity, I feel like it would leave some evidence. And what it seems like is that she got out of her car and left it the way it was.
Yeah.
And to me, like, why'd she pull over there? Why'd she get out of her car? Why did she leave everything to include the keys in the ignition?
Yeah, and I do find that weird, because even if the sunrise theory is correct, which to me makes sense that sure. She would drive out to Malibu to watch the sunrise.
Why would she leave the keys in the car?
I leave the keys in the ignition. Like, right. I would never do that.
Right.
You know, I get, okay, you leave your phone behind because you don't want to be distracted. You're trying to clear your head. You're trying.
Yeah, but you also, if your plan is to go back to that car, you wouldn't leave the car unlocked. Like, you would want your stuff there when you get back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you wouldn't leave the car in that state.
Yeah. Like, that's so strange to me. That's why I have, like, a hard time with that. And I don't know that, I don't necessarily buy that she was like disoriented and wandered off there. I mean, cause Div never said anything like that.
Right.
And she, you know, from what we can see on the surveillance video, like she looked fine when she left.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily buy that she left the keys in the car and wandered off because she was like having some sort of a mental health crisis or whatever.
Yeah.
And if it were her deciding to harm herself, I would believe that she would have left more evidence of that behind. Not necessarily like writing a note,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, this is somebody who discussed her rape on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could see like making a final post somewhere or even like some cryptic something. You know yeah. what I mean? It seems weird that she would have just given no indication to anybody about it.
And then walked out into the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I also can't get past her sharing her location with Div 20 minutes after she left.
Yeah. Why did she do that?
Yeah. Like, did she do that because she was hoping that somebody would find her body? Or did she do that because she was scared and wanted somebody to know where she was?
But what would have prompted her to be scared?
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, if
she was scared, let's say by a vehicle following mm-hmm. her, by that theory posed by somebody on the internet, like, why then wouldn't she call Div?
Yeah.
Or the police or somebody?
Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, the person knew her,
mm-hmm.
convinced her to get in the car somehow, and she was trying to, like, play it cool. But just sent that, shared her location just kind of as a backup.
Yeah.
You know, like didn't feel like she could or should call Div and say like, hey, something's wrong.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. Even that though, like I feel like she could have texted and texting is probably easier than sharing your location.
Yeah.
And quicker, you know?
Right.
So I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, these theories are all plausible. But none of them 100% make sense with what we know.
Right. Because, you know, if you even going back to Susan, if the idea is that she drove home, then she would have shared her location with Div when she was about halfway home. Because right. the drive was 40 minutes and she shared the location 20 minutes into it.
Plus then the cell phone gets pinged in Malibu.
Yeah, at that afternoon. But yeah, but that's another reason too why the abduction, like a morning abduction, doesn't make sense because it seems as though the phone went in and out of service.
Mm-hmm. Which would and lead somebody, you to believe that phone was traveling.
Exactly. And so if somebody just grabbed her off the beach at sunrise, the phone would have been just in the car the entire time.
Yeah.
So there was no reason that it would have worked, not worked, and then worked again. My first theory when I had heard about this case was that she, you know, was going through a lot and had harmed herself. And again, yeah, I don't like that there's no physical evidence of that, but it's the ocean. It can happen. But the phone part of that is just, that doesn't really fit.
Right. Nor the car being on that, at that location for 5 days.
Yeah. Investigators say that this case is open until it's resolved and they'll act on any new leads immediately. And they encourage anyone who remembers anything, perhaps a passerby who saw an early morning encounter on the PCH, or, I mean, even better, somebody who remembers seeing that car parked weirdly for a couple of days. They're looking for these people to come forward. As Susan Park has often said, somebody out there knows something, however small it may be. But until that somebody speaks up or some piece of evidence surfaces, Elaine's family and friends are left in agonizing limbo, clinging to the hope that one day there will be a development that finally explains what happened after she drove away in the dark on January 28th, 2017. Elaine Park has been missing from Calabasas, California since January 28, 2017. She is an Asian female of Korean descent with brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a white sweatshirt, denim shorts, and possibly gray sweatpants and a necklace with the letter E. Elaine has the following tattoos: a dagger and flowers on her right arm, a rose on her left shoulder, and a cow skull and a moth on her left arm. At the time of her disappearance, her hair was waist length and had blonde tips. If you have any information on Elaine Park's disappearance, no matter how minor it may seem, please contact the Glendale Police Department at 818-548-4911 or submit an anonymous tip at 1-800-222-TIPS. Every bit of information can help. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!